You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this episode of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm Brent Thomas, your host, and I hope you're having a great week, whatever it is you're doing, and thank you for spending at least a part of it with us here on the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Tonight, I'm not alone. I got my good friend and co-host, Mr. Don Longbeard, here in the studio with me.
That would be me again.
It is, and you know, you keep bringing that fancy flavor to the show, so, I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for coming in, and it's going to be an interesting show. Now, this is a topic I really love. I'm really fascinated by this because it brings so much from childhood to life. It gives it a reality and it gives it a credibility. And what we're going to talk about tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is the little people. Now, we have a good friend and researcher, Mrs. Robin Moonshadow. And she is a researcher in the little people realm, and as well as Bigfoot and other cryptids. She's done a great job with, digging through the lore, digging through the histories, the cultural histories, and so much more, and is actively researching and has found some really interesting pieces of evidence, including prints, and has brought them to the forefront of this. And it seems, you know, it seems to me, Don, that these things are out there. These little beings are out there. What are your thoughts on this?
You know what? This is an interesting thing because, you know, we've always heard of, you know, Bogart, brownies.
Boggles.
Anyhow, but we also hear about leprechauns and chiricons and things like that. But we don't really get, we just get like basic stories. We don't get information. And right. Robin has provided so much information. It's just incredible. And I can really believe that, you know, like I've said before, I could believe in Bigfoot. I could believe in little people. I could believe in aliens faster and better than, say, you know, ghosts and spirits like that. Huh. So this really, you know, really interests me because, and it's fun information too.
It is. And you know, what's neat for me, and of course, growing up with all of the children's stories that I grew up with, the seven dwarves these fairies and pixies and stuff. And now what we're going to talk about tonight is not necessarily the fairies and pixies. That's a whole nother discussion, but we're going to keep it to the little people, the gnomes. And as Don mentioned, the leprechauns and their related beings, things like the puckwudgies, these little diminutive creatures that seem to be existing in and around our world. It's just amazing. Now, there's been plenty of history to these claims, and this is not just a revisiting of an old legend or lore. There's been continuing reports of people seeing these things.
Yep.
People in their gardens seeing these little bearded people with pointy hats, and having really sometimes horrible meetings with them. And sometimes they're really benign and pleasant. And there seems to be a full spectrum of what is out there. And of course, for a lot of people, it's hard to understand. It's like, well, you know, is there a Bigfoot or is there not? And right, that seems like a big stretch of a leap of maybe faith. But then you start adding in these other things too that are out there, like when you're talking about Dogman and these other cryptid creatures that, or beings. I don't mean to diminish or speak in any condescending ways about them. We just don't understand what they are. They could be as intelligent as us, or more so. We just don't know. But but they're out there, and they're the sightings and the experiences with them continue to this very day.
That's right.
So you think this is a strong possibility, or do you not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's very possible. You know, there are you know, lots of videos out there, you know, of little people being videotaped by accident, you know, just the happenstance.
Right.
You know, and I think some of them are fake as, you know, a credit card. Yeah. But, you know, well, I mean, there's got to be
because a credit card.
Credit card's just fake money.
Oh,
like
okay.
Checks.
Gotcha.
You know, there's got to be some out there that are true. You know, like you mentioned, you know, Robin's found footprints and things like that. And I can believe this, and it would be fun to, you know, have an experience. You know, they're not necessarily all good. They're not all bad. And some of them are just mostly in between, but
sure.
You know, I mean, it would just enrich my life.
Yeah, I think it would. And I think you're right. And I understand what you mean by saying that, because just the chance to have witnessed something like this. And, you know, I hope that if you do have that experience, that it's one of the really good ones and not one of them where they go sideways. Cause these things, I mean, they got the full spectrum of behavior.
Yes,
they got
they
the
do.
Really nice, like old neighbor kind of guy. And then you've got the neighbor from hell kind of guy.
That'll literally cut you up.
Yeah. They just want to see the world burn. They just don't like us. And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, they probably had such terrible experiences,
right,
you know, in their histories that they've just learned, you know, most people are just not good, you know, for them,
right.
For
right,
them. And
right.
I don't mean that most people are not good, but, you know, we have a tendency, excuse me, to destroy what we love.
It's
the human condition. We love something. So you know, for instance, if tomorrow it became well known that there were gnomes in our forests, what do you suppose would happen?
We'd have about 500,000 people looking for gnomes in the forest.
Right. There would just
and
be
it would
trampling
kill everything. Yeah.
Trampling through forests, just, you know, and even people in the limited numbers that do currently go out into the forest have a huge impact on those environments. And so that's the other side of it, that if they did suddenly become acknowledged, yes, there are these beings out there, and if you see them, blah, 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 be careful. There would still be plenty of people just going in throngs to the forest.
Yes. Yeah.
There'd be, you know, people cutting paths through pristine wilderness just so they could drive their car through, you know. I
mean, exactly, yeah.
You know,
well, they're doing that anyhow. But.
Well, they are, but you know what I mean? It's like, well, I don't want to get out of the car, but I'd be willing to drive through it for $5. Well, somebody will make a road to make that happen, you know, and it will just have huge impacts on the environment. And that I don't think would be good, but I think it is really fascinating to think that so many things are going on in our world, and we for the most part seem oblivious to them. And it really does rekindle that childish imagination, that childhood sense of wonder, you know, that there is these other things that are just around the corner. They're just out of sight. They're just, you know, and what are they? You know, are they physical little beings, or are they some kind of manifestation of a spiritual being, or an earth energy of some kind?
Right.
I don't know. You know, I wonder. It's kind of like the Bigfoot. We just don't seem to know. There are camps on all of the spectrum of what Bigfoot is, what Bigfoot isn't. Well, you know, the same thing is true for these things.
Right.
How come people don't see them? Well, I mean, because here's the thing. You've got these little, and for instance, Robin talks about these kind of gnomes called red caps.
Yep.
okay, the red caps are these evil little bastards, and but they're apparently running around with these red cone hats, just like these garden gnomes people have out in the yard. How do people miss those? You know, how are they wandering around not being seen? So that's the mysterious side of it. It's like, how do they remain hidden when they're wearing a red cone on their head? You know, beep, it's not like beep, a natural beep. Color.
Yeah, exactly.
In the forest, you know. It's like, oh, what's that red mushroom bouncing around for? You know? Now, the physical description of these things, ladies and gentlemen, is roughly 18 inches to 2 feet, as far as I understand it. Is that what you understand, Don?
Yeah, yeah.
So yep. It's not like they're you know, they're not like Tom Thumb size, right. You know, or whatever. I mean, they're actually significantly.
They're small people.
Yes.
They are like toddler size.
Right, toddler size. Good example. And, you know, and unfortunately there's other ones like the Puckwudgie that you can understand why they can blend in, because they apparently take things from their environment and wear them.
Camouflage.
Yeah. Yeah, they camouflage themselves. And then there's another kind of little people, and we're going to, you know, obviously cover a pretty broad swath in here as we discuss these, but I just want to put out the different types that there are. Allegedly there are like the Cherokee little people, which mm-hmm. look like. As if they were Cherokee, but they're just a much more diminutive size. And how interesting is that? So there are many First Nation histories of these things existing peacefully with the tribes that they are closest to. And I think that that's really cool, like cooperating on hunts, cooperating on defense of their territories, and you know, having these really cool relationships with them. So, you know, there are so many of these different varieties around. Some of them are seem very European, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. others seem almost feral, you know,
right,
like
right.
they're just one step away from being a little Bigfoot.
Right. Less evolved.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And are they really? I don't know, but that's interesting. But yeah. Don, you've got a list of several them.
Yeah, I do.
So this list was compiled by our friend Robin Moonshadow. So. If you would, and these are just the gnomes, correct?
Yeah, I have the history of the gnome family.
So this is just the gnomes, ladies and gentlemen, but listen to this and I think you'll gain a new appreciation for the number of different types there are just in this one classification.
Right. So she writes, the gnome family is quite a large one. They come from us across the world, says Germany, the gnome. Norway, I'm going to pronounce this right or wrong, so forgive me, Nisse, Switzerland, the Tomte, and Ireland as the leprechauns. All gnomes share the same description, except for their clothing and behavior and where they live. They are no taller than 2 feet, with men of a certain age, I like how she said that, men of a certain age, donning a medium to long beard, whereas younger men, usually unmarried, are clean shaven or have a very short beard. The women wear their hair braided and pinned up, while the girls sport 2 braids, one on each side of their head, or a single long braid down their back in the fashion for girls of marrying age.
Mm, so they're kind of Amish.
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm not disparaging the Amish. Is that not an Amish tradition?
They have a very conservative look to them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, you know, the long beards, short beards. Yeah, it follows. It seems to follow along pretty nicely with the Amish tradition in that sense, the dress and things like that.
Right.
Most dress in traditional red, green, browns, and sometimes violet pointed hats, matching skirts, shirts, and lederhosen, with or without suspenders. So that's the general overview. Let me jump down here to the different kinds.
Yeah.
So we've got, she says there's a house gnome. Or a domesticated gnome. Mm. The house gnomes are good-natured, diminutives, helping with household chores such as cooking, cleaning, babysitting. A single male or an entire family will help with all the chores. They live within the same home side by side with their humans. Now, regarding them, you know, those are the ones I want in my house, you know. you know, just be nice to them and be nice to everybody around you, and they'll stick with you. Apparently, Robin says they're generational. They'll stick with you from member to member to member of your household. You know, if you go the way of the dinosaur and your kids, you know, get the house, they go with the house. Mm-hmm. You know, they stay with the house as long as, you know, that lineage is still there. She said something else too that I thought was kind of interesting. However, if you have a disruptive household, whether that be a lot of loud, and when I mean loud, I mean disruptive behavior in your house, mm-hmm. they may choose not to live there.
Right.
You know, and she says that around Christmas time or January, February is when they're looking for new houses. Is that right?
That's what I understood as well. Yeah. So the late winter is when they're kind of moving around, and it's allegedly supposed to be the time to watch for them as well, because that's the time that they're most out of the houses looking for some place to go.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing that puzzles me about this is that how can they be in a house and you wouldn't see them? You know what I mean? That's the part that really is hard for me to wrap my head around. And I'm not casting doubt on the whole thing. I think that it's a magnificently cool idea.
Yes.
But I wonder that. It's like, how could these things live in the same location as a family of people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I know my house, right? I know when I get up. I mean, if something's out of place, it's just like, ding, okay. You know, it just hits you on a subconscious level because something's not where it was.
Right.
But how could these little things exist within the same physical structure as a living family, and the living family would not maybe know that they were there? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
That's the part I'm not sure about. But yeah, I'd love some house gnomes myself.
Definitely.
I would love to have them drag a vacuum around every once in a while.
Yeah, you know, yeah, help with those dishes.
And, yeah, exactly. Let's get her done together. You're paying the rent.
Exactly.
But that's curious.
You know, and I just thought it was interesting that they are very particular in the kind of people that they'll live with. They won't live with just anybody. They'll apparently stake you out. They'll know what kind of a family you have or what kind of a person you are by your actions, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's just great, you know. I mean, wow.
Yeah, it is. It's really powerful. And I think that's got to be my favorite kind so far that I've ever learned about.
Right. So the next kind are the country or woodland gnomes. The woodland gnomes, with or without a family, spends a great deal of time gathering food and herbs and helping hurt and sick animals of all kinds, though gnomes are cautious when helping birds of prey. It is said that if there are an abundance of mushrooms in the forest, a little person or gnome is in the area, like toadstool rings and fairies.
Mm.
Most gnomes are vegetarians because of their love of animals. However, they do eat fish and eggs. Other members of the gnome family, such as redcaps or duende, do not eat meat. The woodland gnomes dress in forest colors to blend into their surroundings. They wear the traditional pointed hats or beanies. So you've got the conical hat,
right?
Or you've got the beanie, like most cartoon, you know, gnomes nowadays have.
Okay.
So now that's kind of cool too, you know, because they're out there taking care of nature. You know, they're out there, you know, cleaning things up and making sure everything's cool,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's kind of interesting. Well, and I don't find it surprising that they would be vegetarians either.
Right.
Well, it looks like they're pretty much, they eat fish and eggs, so they're not quite vegan as opposed to red caps or duende.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. That makes total sense.
It does. And of course, the red caps we mentioned before are quite quite a bit aggressive as far as on the behavior meter.
Oh, yeah.
Robin has explained that they are, you know.
Oh, I'll get to them.
Oh, well, here, let me just let you do that then, brother.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and jump down to the red caps here because they are the fun ones to talk about.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote a lot about them too. So red caps or duende. The red caps are also called duende. They are anti-gnomes, as she refers to them. They originate from Scotland and are the polar opposite of what we know to be good-natured gnomes. In days past, they lived in abandoned castles waiting for unsuspecting humans to wander into their lair, and during the night, the human would be slayed in their sleep by the small pikes they carry.
Jeez.
They were so proud of their actions that they would soak their caps in the blood of the slayed humans. hence the name Red Caps. They dress in dirty, raggedy clothing, sharpen their teeth and nails to points, and even their beards are dirty and matted. They deliberately set out to do harm to both humans and animals. They don't care who sees them. Unlike most gnomes, they do not eat meat and will snatch a fish, a small animal. They do eat meat.
Okay.
Other gnomes eat fish and eggs, but not anything else. So it says, unlike most gnomes, they do eat meat and will snatch a fish, a small farm animal, a cat or a small dog, and eat it raw.
Oh.
Harassing humans is their favorite way to pass the time. From sticking sticks into the spoke of moving bicycles, sending the rider into the dirt, to frightening small children by jumping out at them from a hiding spot, usually a drainage ditch or a garbage dumpster, laughing a very sinister laugh all the way. They'll throw rocks and broken glass at passers from high above. They also enjoy tormenting chained dogs, stealing food, pushing baby strollers with the baby inside, and abducting small children.
Oh, no.
They often engage in tormenting the disenfranchised living on the street. They are foul-mouthed and will also travel in groups to cause even more havoc in an area before they part ways. They will lodge in any abandoned building, sewer, or warehouse, and have been reported in Mexico, Argentina, America, and across Europe, especially their homeland. Rumpelstiltskin would have been a proud one of these, or perhaps a founding member. If you're lucky enough to have a gnome working or living in your house or barn, remember to show them respect for their hard work. Okay, that's just kind of a wrap up. But
yeah,
there you go. So yeah, they're vicious little.
They are. Wow.
Yeah, just for fun, and they'll just laugh the entire time.
Yeah, look at them bleed.
You know, that's crazy though. Yeah, and I've heard about them way before I met
Robin.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, I knew that they dipped their hats in the blood of their victims.
Yeah, you know, and
scary.
now the curious part is, where does this information come from? You know, it's kind of like, you know, who is the person reporting on this?
Yeah. Who survived?
Right. Is this a survivor's tale? Is that the person that wrote this all down? Or is this just, you know, was it written by the other gnomes because they hate these guys?
They put them on Front Street. These are the guys you're looking for.
Yeah, these are the droids you're looking for.
Public enemy number right over one, there. Two, you know, and 5,000.
There's all kind of real estate disputes. So those are the evil ones. Go get them. You know, I don't know. But, you know, if that is true, that's totally horrible, of course. Now, I've heard... When I've heard most of the encounter stories of people witnessing these little people, they do seem to be the either Puckwudgies or these Red Caps.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Those are the two that seem to come up, and perhaps it's because of their active desire to cause mayhem. You know, I mean, really, they just seem to want to make things go to hell.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And, you know, perhaps that's why, because they're more brazen and just like, here I am, what you going to do about it?
Right.
You know, I don't know, but it's really spooky, you know, to think that there's things out there, and for whatever reason, why do they hate big people so much? I don't know.
Maybe they're jealous.
Maybe a small man complex or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I can take him. I got him. I got this one. Just hold me back.
Hold my beer.
Yeah,
you don't know what the hell's going on there, but they just seem really angry.
Yeah.
And now with the Puckwudgies, there is a legend about those. About, you know, apparently, they initially, according to legend, tried to help people. But they kept making a mess of things and screwing things up, kind of like they were the Gilligan of the little people world.
The Gilligans.
You know, they were the ones that would screw things up all the time. And but they tried to do well, but it just didn't work. And then the humans had gained the favor of some giant, and the Puckwudgies became jealous and decided to slay that giant and his kin, which they managed to do. But apparently, in the process, the Puckwudgies were thrown the giant kind of started it, I guess, because the people were claiming, oh, we're being tormented by these little these little furry things, could you get rid of them? And the giant's like, sure. Now the legend goes, and obviously I don't think this is literal, but he would grab the little puck wedgies and chuck them, and that's, and some of them actually lived, but they ended up in far distant places, and that's how they propagated and spread.
Right.
You know, I don't know what to make of that. It is a story, but they then decided that they hated this giant. This is a giant they all had revered for so long, but so they teamed up and went after him and killed him and his kin, his kids, and the whole deal. And so that's why they hate people, and they never have forgotten that, apparently.
Apparently not.
So that's kind of that deal, and I'm not sure what to make of that other than, you know, that is a First Nations legend, and I think I don't know what to take from those, and I don't mean to say that I'm doubting that, because I know it's very important in the histories of the First Nations people. It's just I have grown up in this Western civilization, and of course we have these very mechanical and concrete ideas of the world, and of course they take a very esoteric approach to everything, and it's probably a much better approach, but it's just hard for my Western mind to understand something like that happening,
right?
You know, so I don't know what to say about that one, ladies and gentlemen, but that is the legend of it. So that's how the Puck Wedgies came to hate us, but I don't know why the Red Caps came to hate us. I'm not sure what the background on that one is. Perhaps they were really mistreated as well.
Who knows?
Do you remember Robin ever mentioning that?
You know, I don't recall, actually, yeah. And that's unfortunate. I think we'll have to ask her.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're going to get her on the podcast as well, ladies and gentlemen. So awesome. We'll have a chance to ask her all these questions in person, and she can share with us some of the amazing tales that people, the actual sightings that mm-hmm. people write to her about experiencing these things firsthand. And they are just fascinating stories. I don't want to give any out, even though I really do want to. I want to say, oh, there's this one that she told us, but I'm going to save that for when she's on the show, because she's just such a fascinating and wonderful person, and she's done such an incredible job, you know, bringing
collecting this information. Yeah.
Yeah, collecting. And believe me, now doing the Paranormal Portal, which we have for, you know, 3 years now, I've tried to do shows before I met Robin. I tried to do shows regarding the little people, the gnomes, the, you know, Puck Wedgies, all these things. And I'm here to tell you, it's a hell of a thing to research, because the information is so sporadic and scarce. And, you know, I could never find much of any substance to really carry a whole show on. And it was really frustrating for me.
Right.
Then I met Robin, and of course she came on, and
it was like, wow.
Yeah. She's really blown everybody's socks off, because this is something she has literally dedicated her life to, that and Bigfoot research. So, and Dogman research and everything. I mean, she's just totally an amazing person. And how she's dug up all this information, I don't know. It's just fascinating, though.
Yeah, she's dedicated a lot of time to this.
Right, she really has. So, but I think at this point, we better probably take a break, huh?
Oh, is it that time already?
I think so.
Wow, okay.
I think we're at about the 25-minute mark. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be right back. Don't go away for more of the Paranormal Portal in just a couple minutes here. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I'm still your host, Brent Thomas, and I'm still joined by my good friend, Mr. Don Longbeard, who is also co-host.
Still be me.
It's still you. And we are tonight talking about the little people phenomena, which is an amazing phenomena, which both Don and I find absolutely compelling and very, very interesting. And it just really rekindles a lot of magic that the world seems to have lost in our modern age. And I like this phenomena, as we were talking about before, Don. I think it's I think it's incredibly powerful. I think it speaks to the dynamic nature of the reality we live in, that so many things still happen that we just aren't aware of or can't quantify. We can't put it in a test tube. We can't just put it on the shelf in a lab and say, you know, exhibit A or whatever. It just, there's so much going on in our world. So we were breaking down kind of a list of some of the gnomes that are believed to be out there, a list that was created by our very own Robin Moonshadow, who is an amazing researcher into the little people gnome crypto
proto pygmies.
Sorry, I was gonna say cryptocurrency for some reason. No. I don't know where the hell that came from, ladies and gentlemen, but that's how my mind works, which doesn't really explain anything. But where are we at on that list now?
Well, you know, we covered house gnomes, domestic gnomes, country or woodland gnomes, and we got to talking about the red caps or the duende. So that's where we left off, was the duende.
Ooh.
Yeah, the little buggers that'll kill you in your sleep. That's still rocking me. I'm like, why? What'd I do?
I know.
Sweet porridge for
It's so hard to understand what you know, how they could still hold such a grudge, but maybe they just think we're that dangerous, you know.
Well, you know, and I was thinking when you were reintroducing the show back, you know, you were talking about how it brings back the mystery and stuff like that. And I was thinking, and the innocence of childhood. And then the red caps popped in my head and said, if I would have seen those in my childhood, it wouldn't have been very innocent. but you know, I mean, yeah. It just is what it is. And, but you know, it does bring that innocence of the child back with the hope of the leprechauns and brownies and things like that. So,
yeah.
So, but anyhow, but we were talking about red caps actually.
Okay.
But actually, I'm done talking about red caps.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. I don't want to draw those nasty things to us. So let's go back up on the list here. So city gnomes.
Ooh, cool.
City gnomes are seen most often. They live in our houses, old or abandoned buildings. Some have even been seen by homeless people living on the streets, city parks, high-rise office buildings, and apartment buildings, all described as wearing traditional garb. All bookstores and libraries seem to be a favorite place to live or visit, as well as city zoos, where they also live and visit and help the animals at night.
Wow.
There once was a farmer who had no hay left for his farm animals. He sat one day and complained about it, and he heard a voice say, "I will help you." Wow. The farmer looked around and couldn't see where the voice came from. After a few days, he noticed his animals were thriving, although he had no food. One day, the farmer decided he would take his chance and cross the ice to the neighboring village and buy some hay. When he was in the middle of the ice, a small man appeared and asked where he was going. The farmer replied that he was going to buy hay. The little man said not to worry because he would help him, so the farmer returned home. One night, the farmer noticed by moonlight a little man leading one of his cows across the ice to the neighbor's farm. When they returned, the cow was loaded down with hay. The farmer realized that the gnome, that the little man was a gnome and had been fetching hay for the animals. So, yeah, so city gnomes. Wow, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's way cool. You know, but, you know, and old bookstores, I could see that actually having a gnome in a bookstore.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. That's a neat possibility.
You know, I've been to so many bookstores on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been down to the Gaslight down in San Francisco and just all kinds of bookstores. Little bookstores are the best. But, you know, they have this feel that I just absolutely love. And thinking that that might be a place where a gnome might be living, that makes it just a little more magical.
It really does. Yeah, I agree.
That's cool.
Now, can I share with you something that I find absolutely compelling?
Well, of course.
And this really speaks to the longevity of the phenomena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of course, we know that, you know, a lot of these legends come from, you know, Finland, Sweden, with gnomes and right. You know, beings such as this. And I don't mean that to be an exhaustive reference, but you know what I mean. So there's a story out there. And this is a even on internet standards, this is an old story. And it's a site that's no longer even active. It's a it's an archive that I found this on, but I found it really compelling and interesting. But it talks about you know, some background on the gnomes. And this is what it says, that around about AD 1200, the Swede Frederick Ugarf found a well-preserved wooden statue in a fisherman's house in Nidaros, now Trondheim, in Norway. The statue was 15 centimeters, which is just under 6 inches high, not including the pedestal. Engraved on the pedestal were the words Nisse, Riktag Stotrels, or Storels, which means gnome, actual height. Now, this is AD 1200. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this would be very diminutive for a gnome, as we understand them, according to Robin's research. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes you wonder. So, is it possible that this was an actual depiction, or is it possible that this was just, you know, a keepsake that somebody made? Kind of like, you know, when you go to see the Eiffel Tower and you go into the gift shops and there's little Eiffel Towers on the shelf, right, you know. Right. Could it be something like that? But it's still very interesting. And it speaks to the, you know, the fact that the belief in these things has been around for, you know,
millennia.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the statue had been in the fisherman's family as long as anyone could remember. And Ugarf succeeded in buying it only after a few days of negotiation. It is now part of the Olive family collection of in Uppsala. X-ray tests have proven the statue to be more than 2,000 years old.
Wow.
It must have been carved from the roots of a tree that no longer is known, and the wood is incredibly hard. The letters were carved many centuries later. The statue's discovery and dating illustrates that what gnomes themselves have said, apparently people are communicating with gnomes, that their origins are early Scandinavian. It was only after the great people's migration beginning in AD 395 that gnomes appear in the lowlands, probably in 449, when the Roman outpost of Britannia fell to the Anglo-Saxons and Jutes. Some evidence of this comes from the statement of a pensioned Roman sergeant, Publius Octavius.
Oh, you've mentioned this before.
Yes, this is I love this story. Who owned a villa and farm in the woods outside of Lug... These names are so tough. Lugdunum... I don't know. I just totally brutalized that name. But it's now Leiden in Holland. And he married a local woman and so did not return to Rome. And it was pure luck that his property was spared destruction at the hands of the barbarians. Publius Octavius wrote the following description in AD 470. Today, I saw a miniature person with my own eyes. He wore a red cap and blue shirt, and had a white beard and green pants. He said that he had lived in this land for 20 years. He spoke our language, mixed with strange words, and since then, I have spoken with the little man many times, and he said he was a descendant of a race called Kuwalden, Kuwalden, a word unknown to us, and that there were only a few of them in the world, and he liked to drink milk, and time and again, I saw him cure sick animals in the meadows. In the chaotic time until 500, after Odoacer, king of the Germans, had disposed of the last ruler of the Western Roman Empire, the gnomes must have established themselves in Europe, Russia, and Siberia, although exact information is lacking. Actually, gnomes find writing history uninteresting, or at least pretend to, but it is rumored that they have certain secret records. In his book in 1850 or 1580 rather, Wunderlich or Litch mentions that in his time gnomes had maintained a classless society for more than 1,000 years, except for their own chosen king. There were no rich, poor, inferior, or superior gnomes. and this is perhaps why they made use of the great people's migration to begin afresh. It all sounds plausible until he tells of a man, or a map rather, now lost, of a gnome king's palace and adjacent gold mines. Apparently, slave labor was used in the mines, and sometimes there were slave revolts. I don't know. This stuff is really bizarre. Using our scant information as a guide, we must conclude that gnomes gradually sought more contact with the people they had lived among, and that they were completely integrated into our society in 50 to 100 years before the reign of Charlemagne in 768 through 814. Very interesting.
Wow.
It also, there's one last paragraph, if you don't mind. It's a, do you mind?
No, not okay. at all.
Just
no.
want to make sure. The map above shows a number of sites, and there's no map here to reference, but in North America, where gnomes are reported to exist. The difficulty with establishing to a certain certainty that gnomes do indeed live on these on this continent has been that no sighting or encounter can be confirmed unless witnessed by two observers. The same criteria used by bird watchers, and thus, through considerable evidence, has accumulated. None of it is reported in this book. Right. It can be surmised, however, that American gnomes, whose geographical range corresponds to their fellows' climate and life zones in Europe, do adapt to the same dress, lifestyles, and behavior patterns as their cousins across the sea.
Right.
Now, apparently that's an excerpt from a gnomes mm-hmm. text by Will Huygen, or Huygen, H-U-Y-G-E-N, and published in 1977. So it's quite an old book. Very cool, though. Sorry about that. So no. Please go ahead now.
Well, no, that's just interesting because you just mentioned that the gnomes use slave labor in the mines.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's where the red caps came from.
Oh, you know what? That's a good, interesting possibility.
Yeah. Cause as soon as you said that, it's slave labor, I was like, disgruntled people, disgruntled right. gnomes, red caps.
Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, interesting. So maybe
that could be the root maybe. Of a lot of hatred.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that could cause some issues. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool though. But I know you've mentioned that before
yeah.
and you took some time to find it. So
yes,
it's nice to hear it again. But that's really actually really cool. As a matter of fact, I do believe that Robin says that, they started spreading across the world, oddly enough, about 4,000 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So you're talking about, you know, AD or BC before, well, it'd be CE, current era, before, so
no, BE, it is.
Before, whatever, BCE, yeah. BCE, before current era. Yeah. So, you know, that would be 4,000 years, you know, we're getting up there. So that's actually really, really cool.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I don't know this book, and I've only found this little excerpt of it.
Right.
I would like to do some research and try to see, you know, this book in its entirety.
Right.
It sounds incredibly interesting.
Well, it's just really cool that, you know, you found it. I mean, and it's just exactly what you were looking for,
yeah.
you know? So, you know, and that reminds me of the picture of the gnome. Well, they call it a fairy boot, but Robin agrees that it's a gnome because gnomes are shoemakers.
Oh,
gnomes are
cobblers. The mouse skin?
Yeah, the mouse skin yes. fairy boot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's really impressive. So, not sure what's yeah. going on there, but and what Don is referencing, ladies and gentlemen, is an old, I don't know when the picture was even from. Oh. It's an old picture.
I still have it right here.
Right, but there's no information to go with it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, unfortunate, but true. Yeah.
But it's an old picture of a small shoe next to a thimble, a mm-hmm. sewing thimble. And apparently this shoe was cobbled together and is made from mouse hide.
Right.
And if you're thinking of these little people, I mean, it makes sense that they would use the hide of a mouse, right?
Right. right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who in their right mind is going to bother putting together a whole shoe out of mouse hide just for a hoax? Well, you know, I suppose it's possible.
Well, you got to remember though, it's the size. It's slightly bigger than a thimble, too.
Right,
so and it's rather tiny. Well cobbled.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that is that's the curiosity of it, I guess.
Yep.
You know, it's not like they had super glue. You know, it's
crazy.
Yeah, dude. It's really crazy.
So, yeah, truly, truly interesting stuff.
Yeah. So, continuing on your list.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here.
Are the leprechauns on there?
The leprechauns, I have the leprechauns pulled up. And this is, this is and definitely something.
And their cousins.
And their cousins, certainly, of course.
Your favorites.
My peoples. Wow. In that sense, she's got a whole lot here talking about the history of leprechauns. But let's go down here. Okay, so like the Unisundai, the little people of the Cherokee Nation in America and the Tomate Nese, some leprechauns watch over and guard certain people and their families for generations. If one of these clans of little people happen to guard your family or simply take a liking to you, it's because they see something good within you and you will have good luck and good health all of your life. Some of these leprechauns are even said to have followed their chosen family onto boats while they made their way to Australia, Canada, and America. Although many claim to have seen leprechauns today throughout the world, they may not be in fact leprechauns since their appearance is so similar to the Tomate and the Nese. Mm-hmm. And of course, the reverse is also true. Few true sightings are ever reported of the Jolly Fellows for fear of ridicule, with the exception of Ireland, whom respect these little people with whom they have shared their island. And thanks to a group of lobbyists, all leprechauns are protected species under European directive.
Wow.
It's claimed that there are 236 leprechauns living in Ireland today, belonging to five clans. The Leinster clan, the Ulster clan, the Connaught clan, the Meath clan, and the Munster clan. So there's a little bit on leprechauns.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Then you have the clericons.
Now, why do you like those guys so much, Don?
Let's get to it. They're considered the black sheep of the family and often confused with leprechauns. These little fellows have a drink of ale or whiskey in a hand, which they have made in their distilleries below ground. They are rude, crude, ill-tempered, and even foul-mouthed. When deep in their cups, they become a menace to the surrounding area. They've been known to put harnesses on sheep, dog, domestic fowl, riding them like horses into the early hours of the morning until they retreat to their homes in a drunken stupor. When they're not pulling off pranks and drinking, they're a bit cranky, no doubt because they have a hangover.
Oh, funny.
But like leprechauns, they are well-mannered. It is also said that unlike leprechauns with their cobbler abilities, they have no formal job, but making alcoholic beverages is a job and one that they can taste test themselves. So leprechauns carry also two pouches, one with a silver and one with a gold coin. And supposedly, if you catch a leprechaun, they're supposed to give you this, but you're supposed to watch the little devil the entire time, because if he disappears, the coin turns to ash. Mm. I mentioned that. They also carry two pouches in case they're caught and will prove to be a challenge to be outwitted like their leprechaun cousins. The clericons are not stylish dressers, dressing in simple, plain clothing. But perhaps this is because they don't want to ruin any fancy clothing by spilling ale on a frilled blouse while riding a sheep bareback through the countryside during the night. See, this is why I love these guys.
Yeah, there's nothing. What's not to love?
It's not like they're red caps. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, they're not killing people.
It may also be a way to more easily distinguish themselves between their cousins. But the hats and shoes with big buckles are the norm with the family of cons. So leprechauns and clericons. So there you go.
It is really endearing though, isn't it?
It kind of is. Yeah. I mean, they're little mischief makers, you know?
Yeah.
And so many things, but you know, leprechauns, you know, the reason I didn't read much of the Leprechauns, because most of it is a story.
Oh.
But there is a story here of someone, this is specifically Leprechauns, heard some banging or some hammering out in his barn one night, went out there and looked, and he didn't see anything. So he still heard the banging and the hammering. And it says the Leprechaun was so engrossed in his work, he didn't hear the man. He snatched up the little fellow as quickly as he could. Says, let me go, let me go. I must be getting careless. That's the third time this week. And all they all want the same thing. Me magic purse. Me magic purse. I have no purse. It's been robbed from me already. So then supposedly they also have the option to grant three wishes.
Oh.
Like the djinn.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, but there's that. So really interesting. And it's claimed that there are 236 leprechauns living in Ireland and from five clans. That's really interesting stuff.
You know, that's it. That is interesting because the banshees are also supposed to be family spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And the wailing of the banshee is not a foreboding of death. But it's not in the negative sense. It's they're mourning the passing of a family member, you know? Oh, so.
Okay.
Are you yawn talking?
I yawned. Okay.
Oh, okay.
I yawn okayed. Sorry.
But there are, that's neat that there's such correlations with that. And the, you know, these, the scope of the show, ladies and gentlemen, is not to either prove nor disprove. Because clearly we can't do that. Don and I are not researchers. We are enthusiasts. We have researched, and that's fine, but it's not what we build our house on. We don't build the house on what we can empirically prove or disprove, but we just like to have these discussions about these amazing phenomena that seem to shape our world and expose a level of the world that's been so much largely forgotten. Now, I think that, you know, there's a reason that children are able to see spirits, that children are able to
interact
with spirits and experience things that the adults can't. And I think it's because they just believe it's possible. A child doesn't have the barriers we have. They don't have the distractions either, which, you know, is nobody's fault. It's just the pace of our worlds. But we hear over and over again that children are often the first to experience anything paranormal, and including in a lot of cases in stories that I've read, even these little people, children will be the first to witness this events. And then, you know, eventually sometimes the adults will as well. But I think that has a lot to do with their minds being open. And that's all I ask with listeners of the show is like, you know, have an open mind. Some of the topics may seem like, oh my God, really? But here's the thing. If one thing in the paranormal is possible, if only one thing you believe is possible, then why can't the others be possible?
Yep. Yeah.
You know, so everything that we talk about are things people are experiencing, have experienced, will experience, and do experience even to this day. We don't get into a lot of ancient history on the shows generally, but we just ask that you keep an open mind and enjoy the conversations for whatever they mean to you. For me, they mean that we are not as arrogantly in charge as we think we are.
No.
You know, we have a lot to learn, and I think that's a good place for us to be. So anyway, that's going to about wrap up our show tonight. Anything in closing, Don?
No, you know, it's just, I've had a great time. It's been a great day.
It has. It's been a good day. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. And stay tuned because we will get Miss Robin Moonshadow in here to represent her work directly. She's done such an amazing job. And while it's fun for us to talk about, it's even better to have her here.
Yep.
Because the dialogue is so amazing, and the stories she brings to the table are absolutely profound. So. Mm-hmm. We'll have her back in the show on the podcast here, and she can share some of the stories and experiences with all of you as well. And I thank you all. So be good, be kind, be nice, take care of each other, help each other out, find the magic in every day, and remember to laugh as much as you can. And we'll be back again. So keep watching three times a week, ladies and gentlemen. These podcasts are going to drop Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So
Friday.
There's always a portal rolling around. And be sure to check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Paranormal Portal Radio, and check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/Paranormal Portal, if you want to see Don and I
actually doing these kinds of things. Yeah,
actually weaving the spell of the portal. Or just tripping all over ourselves, getting through an episode, which sometimes documents exactly what happens. So
exactly.
We love you all. We'll talk to you soon, and take care and have a wonderful day.
Hi, this is Don with Paranormal Portal. Thank you for checking out our Paranormal Portal podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Paranormal Portal. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Paranormal Portal Radio.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.